This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the tight end countdown for this year's draft. Getting really excited. We're here on 4-5 recording this for 4-24. 19 days from now is the first night of the NFL draft. How exciting is that?
It's very exciting, and I feel very underprepared otherwise. I feel good about my tight ends, but normally I feel like I know so many more prospects by now, and got some work to do because I do like to know the players when they're coming off the board.
By the way, I don't think I introduced Alec Bouliatis here, and that's who the voice you're just hearing. If you're a regular listener to this show, you heard him many, many, many times before, so I'm sure you probably recognize it. But, you know, this is an interesting year for exactly what you just said. You can know the tight end group and know what the Ravens might need to do in terms of trading a tight end, say, in order to be even able to pick a tight end, something we went into in great detail in the first show. We're not going to bore you with the entire story again, but please go back to that first episode and listen, because I think the Ravens situation bears understanding before you delve into the rest of this and before you even understand our position on trades, which, as I understand it, Alec has some hypotheticals for us the rest of the time. I'll have one for you too, that we can talk about as we go through our top players in this. And in order to do that, and to refer to your point earlier, you really need to know, if you traded a tight end, what are you getting for him? And not just what are you getting for him in terms of the JJ value, because that's 60% of the story probably. The rest of the 40% is who's available at that moment in time that you might be making that change. And so we'll get, when we get into the top of this, we'll talk about, you know, what might be a reasonable trade of to trade up in the very first round, potentially by trading a tight end. And if that might be a thing the Ravens would consider doing. But anyway, we're all the way up. We're going to start with number 6 here, and we've done 10 through 7 the first time. Let's go through who our 10 through 7 guys were to start with. Why don't you start first?
For me, 10 was Terrence Ferguson, 9 Gunnar Helm, 8 Jackson Hawes, and 7 Jake Brenningstuhl.
Okay, and I had Jackson Hawes at 10, Mitchell Evans of Notre Dame at 9, Jake Brenningstuhl, the Clemson tight end, at numbers 8, and Harold Fannin, who was the first ever tight end MVP of any FCS conference, FBS conference, sorry, FBS conference, this last season when he won it with the MAC MVP with Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Let's go to your number 6 player.
Okay, so number 6, we've entered the realm where trading Mark Andrews to be in position to get this player is okay with me. Obviously, I'm not saying they're going to be Mark Andrews, but like from a clock setting perspective. Thomas Fidone, Nebraska tight end, 6'05", 243, which is low compared to what we think his play weight was. 34-inch arms, long guy, 4'7", 40. former four-star with two ACL tears, only 11 games across those two seasons. He has inline experience, which, like we were discussing in the episode prior, sometimes is lacking in the college game. I thought he had good leg drive through blocks. I thought he had good pacing running his routes, but kind of lacked explosion out of the breaks, not as twitchy as you might want to see, but his length is really prestigious. He's able to have a big catch radius because of his length, and I also believe because of his length, he will be able with, you know, hashtag NFL weight room, to be a very solid blocker. He has the want to, and I think, you know, just refining his technique and getting a little bit more strength. And again, like 243 sounds low. He was listed as 255 in college. You can't really trust any of that, but that is what he was listed at. And I believe his frame could support that.
It's very common that people will lose weight to run better at the combine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And yeah, I think he almost was the number five for me. I was really tempted to do that. But yeah, number six for me. Very good prospect, in my opinion. This is where I started really getting excited about the tight end class.
Okay. Fedoni is off my list for a couple of reasons I'm going to get into, but the primary one is probably the injury flags. That's very serious. But the receiving metrics also were not particularly good. He had the lowest yards per target career of any of the 18 guys I looked at 7.2 yards per target in his entire career. That's just not very good. Now I realize some of it, he's been playing with some less than stellar Nebraska quarterbacks these last few years when Nebraska has really been a down program. He also had the lowest passer rating throwing to him the entire time, 76.6 passer rating through him. Now he does break tackles pretty well, 0.22 last year, 0.15 career. He's certainly not huge by NFL standards. He's probably right in the mid range. If he was back around, 248, 250, would put him right back in the middle of tight ends at 6'5", also. But he has long arms, as you mentioned. I think, you know, one of the things, he's very unpolished piece of stone as a blocker, but he probably has the ability to latch on, pivot, and forklift defensive backs in particular when he gets that opportunity. So, and if he were in the Ravens system, I could really like him as a blocker. He could give you some likely-esque ability to maintain his feet and pivot through a defender there. The receiving metrics are very poor, though, and I have a hard time getting by that. The injury flags were a problem. And, you know, he's an athletic profile that certainly will stick on some roster, not as the Ravens are currently constituted. And he's also a player, I just think there's too much risk getting rid of one of your tight ends to draft Fedoni with the set of risks he brings. Like, the last thing in the world you'd want is to draft a tight end who doesn't make your roster or can't play in 2025 for some reason, to replace your star who you traded away to get draft value. You really look stupid if you made that kind of exchange. So Fedoni's off my list. I still don't have a problem if the Ravens throw a seventh round pick on him, maybe even a sixth round pick. They've got three picks and they got five picks in those two rounds combined. If they want to decide we want a little more competition at tight end, I'm fine with that. I just wouldn't trade somebody to draft Fedoni.
That's fair. The injuries are very concerning. I do agree with that. I guess I'm curious what his quarterback level play was in Nebraska. I would have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, I can find that out for you. And maybe if you're going first on the next guy, I'll do that. So my number six guy was Gunnar Helm. So I think I'm already covered on that.
Okay.
So who's your number five guy?
Elijah Arroyo out of Miami.
Oh, let's hear it.
6'5", 250, 33-inch arms. Great mover, the most maybe athletic and fast guy in the draft, but I thought his routes lacked polish. He's also has an injury history. didn't drop the ball much when Cam Ward threw it his way. Was lucky, like you said earlier in the first episode, that Cam Ward was his quarterback. Does most of his work in the slot. I thought he was really good at in the scramble drills. One thing I'll say about all my tight ends is I felt they were all friendly targets, meaning that they were able to position themselves to be able to catch the ball for the quarterback. And also I felt that they all did well at scramble drill, but I thought Arroyo was particularly good at this. Not the best with his hands placement. That can result in drops in contested catch situations, and just not the best blocker yet, but he has the want to. He is a very traitsy pick, and he could be very good, you know, if he's able to refine all of his current deficiencies. And he's a guy that I think clearly, I would say that's why he ended up with the fifth grade, in my opinion. He is somebody I think is clearly able to be a starting tight end in this league. And that's important, right? If you're trying to replace Mark Andrews or a Likely, you're looking for a guy who is starter eligible. And maybe we're a little spoiled as Ravens fans to be expecting that level of play out of your second tight end. I would just say what I said in the first episode, tight ends are a very underappreciated position group, in my opinion, from a cost perspective compared to wide receivers. So I'm always looking for exceptional pass catchers at the tight end position. And that is why I will always skew my rankings that way, particularly because it's also hard to sometimes evaluate these guys as blockers because they don't get the opportunities in the college game. And, you know, it's not the same game. But yeah, and that's what I would say about Arroyo. A very promising prospect. Another guy I'll be looking at wherever he goes in the NFL and pay attention to.
All right, just I'll give you the combination of the Nebraska quarterbacks before we move on and talk about Arroyo here. 13 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and an 83.8 passer rating. So far from stellar, certainly, in terms of what Fedoni had to work with. Arroyo is one of the guys I came into this process expecting to not like because of a lack of inline play and a belief that he might have gotten too much help from a Cam Ward. And he did get help from Cam Ward, there's no doubt about it, but I ended up licking Elijah Arroyo a lot more, and he ended up being my number two guy.
Okay.
And I'll talk through some of the reasons here. First of all, he had no other testing except he did 22 bench reps. Very unusual, by the way, that players do like a bench only these days. That even a lineman, they're typically loath to bench in terms of that. But he did it. 469.40 was an other measurement. So we look at that with a jaundiced eye, of course. And he'll be 22 in April. So he's one of the younger guys in this thing. He's a pure flex tight end. He's a guy you're not going to line up in line. And I agree with your comment. It thought it's exceptionally accurate to say, why would you ever pay big money for a big slot receiver, for example, if you can get a tight end to do the same thing? Because it's less money. Yeah, it's probably, if you draft somebody in the first round who does this, and I don't think Arroyo is quite worth a first round pick, but if he was, if he had the additional pedigree necessary to do that, and part of that would be additional playing time at the college level because he's been fairly limited in that. Then I'd say that, you know, a guy like that is going to carry a fifth year option tag, which is a hell of a lot lower than a wide receiver. So you're going to save maybe $10 million right away in terms of what you pay him in year five. And that also will carry over into the leverage the team has in that second contract. So I think it makes a lot of sense what you said about, hey, I want a tight end who can catch the ball and I'll skew my rankings in that way. Now, in terms of receiving metrics, and he's playing with Cam Ward, but he was the best of the class in terms of his career ratings of these things. So his yards per target were 12.6 this year, which was the highest of the tight ends. 11.9 career, the highest of the tight ends. His yak was 8.7, highest of the tight ends. And his A dot was 10.4. So he's getting the ball down the field a fair amount, but still piling up yak. The passer rating throwing to him was 129.2. Cam Ward had a hand in that. And the passer rating throwing to him career is 125.5. Again, that's more Cam Ward. Although, didn't Arroyo play somewhere else for a year or something? Maybe I have the wrong guy.
I could believe that.
Okay, you look it up. I'll continue with this. So what I looked at, there's a great cut up of every target he had. Again, I'm thinking I don't like this guy is my initial reaction. I haven't looked at the metrics yet. And I look at the cut up. And one of the first things that really steps out is he's a great extended play target for Cam Ward. And it's kind of like Isaiah Likely. He's working, he's moving all over the field to try and find a space for Ward to get him the football. Ward, very elusive, rolls around the pocket effortlessly, keeps his eyes down the field. And he would find Arroyo a lot on such plays. And yet Arroyo still did not have a big number of contested catches either. So it wasn't like they were bailout targets he's getting. He's getting nice opportunity targets, kind of like the relationship is with Lakely and Jackson a lot of the time. There are a fair number of tight end screens in his stuff. He's a very slippery separator. I think particularly when he's covered by any sort of an inside linebacker, he has a fairly significant toolbox of tricks to lose those guys, and is very slippery, can outrace them to the edge. He can put a slight upfield move on them that almost forces them to slow their movement when they're in trail coverage that I like. A fair portion of the Miami gadget plays went to Arroyo. So a bunch of middle screens, wide receiver screens, short passes off motion. He was so dynamic after the catch, they had to figure out lots of ways to get him the football, kind of like the Ravens would use Zay Flowers. You know, we need to get him the football however we can, because it's exciting when he has it and he can do things with it. Mm-hmm. He had a great defensive play to stop an interception versus Louisville, which I really liked. And then he had flags that were costly. He had a pair of illegal motion fouls that were bad. He had another OPI. All those are declinable fouls. You don't like to see that many, even in a whole season, a whole college season. He had a throwback touchdown to Ward. And this was an interesting one. So Cam Ward, I forget, it was pitch play or whatever. But anyway, he ended up with the ball on a reverse or a pitch. I forget which it was. And then Ward goes out down the left sideline for a pass and didn't realize this, but Arroyo's left-handed threw the ball left-handed anyway.
Yeah.
Beautiful pass, a great play. And you like to see that kind of variability. Some of the players who've had that in the league, you know, you get an extra play or two out of them per season sometimes with them throwing the ball. Derrick Henry, you know, being a good example. He failed to haul in a contested ball versus a much shorter Duke defender, which is one of the really bad ones. He's only one of five uncontested catches for the season. That was an exceptionally bad individual thing, but Cam Ward didn't put him in a position where he had make a lot of contested catches. I think Lamar Jackson would be an ideal fit for this guy in terms of the next level. He had a 74-yard seam pass to Georgia Tech. It was 14 plus 60, so it was his longest reception of the year. Wide open, did not get caught from behind. He's just much too fast for that. And very positive in terms of his yards after the catch. So he's good at keeping his feet after contact. He does a good job of leaving a leg. And that is an ancient kind of terminology often associated with Jim Brown, that he would leave a leg by pulling one leg up in the air, have somebody be trying to tackle it, make it be loose, and then it's more difficult to tackle, and then pulling out of that contact, which was something that was something he was known for at the time. Run blocking is much better than his reputation as a pure receiver, but he still needs to do more in terms of keeping his feet, and needs to be a better blocker. I think there's technique gain that's available to him, as I wouldn't be worried. If this is the Ravens, it'd be an ideal replacement for Andrews in terms of the extended play experience, sure hands. He'd be a great value at 91. He'd be right on par, maybe even a little better than that at 59. The Ravens would probably need to make a draft day trade again to clear out the space for him. But Arroyo, obviously a player I really liked in this draft.
Yeah, he's good. I think, he's tough because I feel like you would almost have to get rid of Mark Andrews in order to make sense for him. I guess you could give it a
great reset, isn't it? In terms of value, though, you've got only do you only have Andrews for 1 year, but you have 30-year-old Andrews that you have to contemplate re-signing, you know, after that.
Right.
So, you know, Arroyo is a you know, guy's coming in at 22, and you get 4 years right off the bat with him. I know, sure. You know, there's no guarantee he's going to be as good as Mark Andrews, but he could be.
Could be. Yeah, and I think one thing I wanted to say about Arroyo, when I looked him up, he is only in Miami. 1 year wonder, for lack of better words.
Yes.
And then maybe that was because of the injury, because like I said, he had I saw in his profile that he had some injuries, and he only played like 5 games in one of the years, so I would suspect it was injury related. I mean, a really exciting player. I can understand why you have him at 2. My number 2 is somebody that I thought about bringing down all the way to 4. So I feel like this area of the draft is where it's, you know, just pick your favorite guy.
Okay.
But I think they're all really good, and they're all going to be day two picks, in my opinion.
I had almost a gap between these guys in some ways, but there were lots of reasons to drop a lot of guys. The thing I went through Arroyo is I just could not find the reason to drop him. Sure. You know, there's only one guy I like better. Obviously, we're going to talk about him later, but it was just, to me, it's just, I could not find the thing that was wrong with him.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys are pretty complete prospects up here, in my opinion. So, yeah, makes sense.
All right, so where do – that was your number five guy or number six guy? Where are we?
That was my number five guy, so your number five guy's next.
All right, my number five guy is Mason Taylor of LSU. There are people who have him higher, and Mason Taylor comes from unbelievable bloodlines. I guess I remember hearing this at the time, but he's Jason Taylor's son, and Jason Taylor was going out with Zach Thomas's sister because Zach Thomas is his uncle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's some stuff going on the Miami, some good dating advice going on the Miami team there, apparently from that era. But anyway, Mason Taylor, 6'5", 251, 465, 40, which is quite fast for a tight end, 32.25-inch arms. Oh, that's positive. He won't be 21 until May. Great bloodlines. Outstanding three cone and 28 bench reps. Does have a poor shuttle, but I'd say basically his athleticism is right there at the top of the tight ends. So he's very special athlete. His receiving metrics do not match that. So he had 7.2 yards per target as a receiver career. Now, let's think about who was the quarterback for Mason Taylor last year at LSU. It was Jaden Daniels. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of good reason why he'd be that poor off. Doesn't have a good yak. His yak per reception last year was 4.6. It's 5.4 career. His ADOT is just middle of the pack, 8.6, 7.0 career. Passer rating throwing to him is only 98 career, 92.1 last year. But I mean, Jaden Daniels was unbelievable. I mean, so I'm a hard time believing that he would have trouble, you know, not doing significantly better than that with Mason Taylor. Does not break a lot of tackles, 0.09 per reception, 0.11 career. So he had the career low in terms of YPT among all the draftable tight ends is my big bugaboo with him. And then I went through the individual tape, and what you see is a guy where there's, again, lots of screens and swings. More often than almost any other tight end in the group, he's catching the ball behind the line of scrimmage. Now, his ADOT doesn't tell you that directly because he's got a mix of some balls he catches down the field and some balls he catches behind the line of scrimmage. But when he's behind the line of scrimmage, he can be 3-4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, almost like a screen passer. Oftentimes, the quarterback is trying to make space for him and actually has to get around, run around the end on his side to get the ball to him. Didn't drop the ball often, 1 in 79 targets. I think he does go up for the ball very strong, has good box out skills. Also has had some targets where he's bracketed and still gone up for the ball. There's a good one in the Ole Miss game if you want to look at that. He had 4 penalties on the year, and I always want to look at that and see what the problem is, but they're really good penalties. 3 false starts, not ideal, but it's a cost of doing business. And frankly, false starts are pre-snap penalties that can't be declined by the defense. So you always hear me talking about how they're less significant fouls. And then his other one was one of these weird one where he was an illegal man down field, an illegal touch in this case, because somebody had covered him and he had no idea what had happened, but it was somebody on the outside had lined up on the line of scrimmage and made the formation illegal. Didn't have anything to do with him, or maybe it did have something to do with him. And he was supposed to be, you know, staggered off the line of scrimmage and didn't do it properly. But anyway, his 4 penalties, not a really big, serious problem. They were most effective when they used play action to get the ball to him. I think they used other forms of misdirection as well to make space in the middle of the field. And that's where he's most dangerous. He's a big body there. He's kind of difficult to bring down, despite the missed tackle force number being not all that great. He's not a vertical threat. So he's a guy, you know, you watch defensive backs catch up to this guy. You don't see him run free for touchdowns. And he finds space in zone, presents himself to the quarterback. He has a lot of highly polished receiving skills and highly polished football skills and understanding that I think come from his bloodlines. But I think I would worry about that in terms of how much better he'd be at the NFL level. So for me, he's a 3rd-round pick. I think, you know, he's been used with some frequency as a pass blocker, which is a plus. He's one of the few guys who is like a plus run blocker and a plus pass blocker in this class. And one of the guys that I took his blocking responsibility seriously. Again, maybe a bloodlines thing. Again, only draftable in the case of a trade. I wouldn't have any problem if they reset to him. I think the value is what would have to occur on this pick. I think he would have to be no earlier than round three. And if he really wants to, if it's to be a lot of value, you'd probably have to get him in round four. But round three is where value starts for Taylor.
I don't think you'll get him there. For what it's worth, like, he's my number four. And I understand why you would say that, but I just feel like he's going to go earlier. For instance, Jason actually has him as starred prospect in the tight end group at number 45. He really likes Taylor. And actually other evaluators I respect have him quite high as well. obviously, like you said, prestigious bloodlines. I felt like he didn't play with as much strength as I thought he should have, given his level. Good pull blocker, though. Sometimes he sets his hands a little too wide, but this is all, like, you know, coachable stuff. Like you mentioned, big catch radius. I thought he had good lateral ability, and he can set up defenders well to create separation. I also felt like he was able to pace himself to set up blocks, and, like, you would see him lure defenders, I thought, with a good acumen. You know, he would lead him one way to set the block, right? I thought he did that quite well. So, like I said, number four on my list, he gets Mark Andrews comps from a couple people as far as his play style and his body type. He feels like a guy that should have an NFL future. You know, obviously we're saying, like, with this, like, where he'll get drafted, but maybe it's just the bloodlines talking, but I feel like he's going to get a second contract. I think he's going to be around for a while.
He's got the tools there to do it. And you start with a tight end who can block and catch the ball and has, you know, decent receiving skills. That combination is not all that common. Even in a good tight end draft like this year, there aren't too many guys who are taking their blocking responsibilities seriously or even have that much in terms of blocking responsibilities, but he had a fair amount.
Yep.
All right, we're up to your number four guy, I guess, then.
That was Mason Taylor. So
okay, and so my number four guy was Terrence Ferguson, who we talked about earlier. So we're all the way up to number three, and I think we've only got no. You still have three guys. I'm not sure. We may only have two guys to talk about.
I already talked about Harold Fannin. I feel like you have a guy like I don't have listed. I'm like worried about it at this point.
No, it's Arroyo who I had at number two is probably the thing. Okay. But so are we up to my number three guy?
Yeah, you're number three.
Okay, so your number three was remind me again.
Harold Fannin.
Harold Fannin. Okay, now that makes sense.
Okay. So we're safe.
So my number three guy, and this is the player I'm probably most unsure about at any position because I really don't like the guy. I have a lot of reasons why I don't like the guy. I'm going to list them out. I'm going to be merciless about that because that's what the draft process is. But it's Colson Loveland of Michigan. And there are some problems that he had to deal with being, you know, the focal point of the Michigan offense along with playing with a shitty quarterback. I mean, that's a really bad combination. He had played with a couple guys who just aren't any good at all. Warren and who's the other guy? But anyway, Warren being Orgy. Yeah, he has a name, O-R-J-I, right? So he's 6'6", 248, a 470 other rating, 32 3/4 arms. There's no other testing that I have for him. His receiving metrics are just really unimpressive. 7.1 yards per target, a yak of 5.2, a short A dot of 7.1, a passer rating throwing to him. Passer rating throwing to him of 78.4. This is from a lot of people's consensus first round draft pick at tight end. That does not compute. Missed tackles force, of course, he'd be better, but he isn't. At 0.05 missed tackles force per reception, he is the lowest of all the draftable tight ends. The lowest. Okay. 0.07 career, also the lowest of all the drafted tight end. He has nice hands, only two drops and 82 targets. One of the real problems with him is he doesn't make contested catches well. Now, he had a lot of contested catch opportunities with 10 this last year. He only completed two of them. He only caught two of them. There is a component that comes up with the biggest tight end on the field, the most reliable tight end, is typically the bailout target for a bad quarterback. And I felt like that was the case. So I'll cut him some slack on that particular component of that. He'll be a much better player with a better QB. I'm still not sure he'll be a first round draft pick with any QB, is part of the problems. He had some flags. He had a holding on a kickoff return that negated a big return versus.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, it takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Texas, which was unfortunate. Now, here's the thing that I can't let him off the hook on. He caught 5 touchdowns in 2024. There were 6 interceptions on balls thrown to him. 6. Okay. Completely unacceptable. I had hoped that this would all be on the just the tape, like every single target once. And right. And somehow I either missed or whatever with 5, but I was looking for them from the beginning, and all of a sudden I find and they go in order on the just the tape stuff that we talked about earlier in terms of the targets. And we get to the interception, and then I look to PFF, and he's got 4 interceptions before that on the season. And I go, wait a minute, you leave those out or something? So overthrows, tip balls, whatever they were, there were problems. And oftentimes, particularly tight end throws over the middle, it is a case where that player was responsible for it. And it's something I really look for in tight ends, given the problems the Ravens have had with Mark Andrews at times in his career, that there have been a lot of interceptions on balls intended for him. His run blocking has been so bad in his career. And by the way, Jason and I have a very different viewpoint on that. You're bringing him up. I was talking to him last night for quite a while, and he thinks he's a great blocker, and I think he's a lousy blocker. There's the best indicator that I'll give you for him being a lousy blocker, and Jason can say whatever he wants, is that the Michigan team made him effectively a designated receiver, which we've seen done with Andrews in the past too, before he improved his blocking. And they put another guy on the field to be both an inline blocker and even a flex blocker for some other downs, such that his run snaps dropped from 53% of snaps in 2022 to 38% in 2024. Now think about that for a second. Think about how much of a significant reduction in run snaps. I mean, it's almost like they're telegraphing that they're going to throw the ball when they put him out there, and they're telegraphing they run it when they put their other tight end out there. So to me, that was a really bad indicator. And this, I think evaluators can run into a problem where they'll pick individual plays and say, no, look at this play and look at this play and look at this play. And there's three examples right there away from you. Just the Michigan coaches did not believe in him as a run blocker. And that I think is the most credible evidence I could provide to it. To me, it's really unbelievable that he's a presumed first round pick. His receiving stats are poor. He's just above average in terms of tight end speed with a jaundiced eye, kind of a measurement that was done on him. He has decent length, but he's never made his size pay off as a blocker. The one thing I'll say about this guy is, you know, I still have him as my number three tight end, is my reaction when he's taken in the first 26 picks is going to be phew. You know, the Ravens don't take him, or I hope the Ravens don't make a trade to take him at number 27. But he's my third best, but he's considerably behind Arroyo in terms of how much I would want the guy.
Gotcha. Well, he's my number one. So here we are. So with the blocking, I understand your position. I wrote down he was not the best blocker. I saw he missed assignments when blocking, which kind of gets to your point of maybe why he was no longer trusted with those things. But I feel like he had the upside is there, that he could be coached into it. Great hands. He's actually a tight end. He's not a converted athlete. He's been playing tight end for a while. Natural pass catcher, in my opinion. He caught a lot of balls that were off target due to the poor quarterback play. One thing that I thought was really important with him is I thought was best in class when it came to keeping his momentum through the catch point and then be able to use that to go forward and get yak. I really liked him. I knew I liked him last year when I saw him pop up on Eric All's film when they shared the field together in 22. So maybe there's a little bit of priors there going on. I can understand why you'd be concerned with him in the first round. Because I don't know. I feel like first round tight ends are a hard pitch sometimes. You know, like I loved Dalton Kincaid. It didn't work out, you know, at least in the way it's been working out so far. It's just he hasn't quite reached that potential. I feel as though with tight end, maybe it's, you know, skewed by bias, but so many good tight ends are drafted at day two, day three, even that when you put your first round capital on them, I mean, you can look at Pitts, you know. He failed. Trying to think of other first round tight ends that weren't great.
Brock Bowers worked out.
Well, Brock Bowers is exceptional, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's some the thrown around term that's too often is generational talent, but I feel like he probably fits the bill there. But yeah, I mean, you think about Trey McBride, right? He was drafted. I forget when, but I think day two. I think he was a second round pick. So like, it's just. I struggle to put first round grades on tight end sometimes, just because of the hit rate being so variable and having such a good hit rate in later rounds. When we talk about the exceptional guys, like Kittle was a later round guy, for instance. Kelsey, I believe, was not like super late, but like not first round pick. So things of that nature. So all the top tight ends were not first round picks. So first round grade on tight end can be a tough thing. I think he would warrant it if he was drafted there, and I wouldn't be exhaling. I don't want the Ravens to pick him first because that's just some crazy trade, in my opinion. And I imagine there's a better player at a better position of need. Again, like just when you talk about value, like I'd rather get a defensive tackle, I'd rather get a safety. You know, there's a lot of other positions that even though it might be devalued positions that I think you could find a better, like higher end talent potentially, or like the fall off be greater later. So, Lovin, he's still not number one. I could see having another guy as my number one. I know I'm kind of on an island with Loveland number one. He's not the consensus number one tight end. But, that's where I landed.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. If the Ravens got him at number 59, I assume you'd be tremendously excited by it. I mean, it obviously would be an economical draft pick from the pre-draft expectations at this point. Fair enough?
I don't know if tremendously excited would be the term. I feel like I can't be that excited for any tight end in this draft because of what it means for other tight ends that I adore.
Yeah, okay.
you know, so, but I think he would be a great value at that pick. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd be really upset if Arroyo was on the board and they took Loveland.
That's fair.
It is what it is. I know. He played with J.J. McCarthy before. I will say every one of his career metrics is better than what he did this last year. So his yards per target with 8.6 career, but only 7.1 last year, dragging it down. And so when he's playing with other quarterbacks, he did do better. There's reason to believe that he could be coached up in some areas. There's also a lot of polish there in terms of who he is as a receiver. So I'm a little concerned about exactly who he is. I do not understand the fascination after watching him play. Anyway, I can just say that. So I guess it's your number two guy who is my number one guy is the only one we have remaining to talk about, correct?
I believe so.
All right. Well, you started off.
Oh, okay. Tyler Warren, Penn State, 6'5", 256, 31 and 7/8 arms. No, 6/8 arms. He played QB before, so he has a great understanding of the defense. He's been used in plenty of trick plays. He runs the ball. He passes the ball. He does everything on the field that you can imagine. Wins in traffic, good ball tracking, but he wins in traffic because I feel like he lacks the pacing and ability to gain separation, which was one of the reasons I was a little lower on him. Another thing that I can't get out of my mind is that Brent Strange and Theo Johnson blocked him for more like playing time the past couple years. You know, he has one great season, similar to Arroyo. Arroyo was the one that actually had the ACL and missed.
Yep.
A large amount. So yeah, just what happened there? I don't know, but I can't imagine him being so good this last year. I mean, granted, he's a little bit older of a prospect, but like he's so good his last year. And then like Theo Johnson, I wasn't that high on, but I know some people liked last year. And then Brett Strange, who I never liked, you know, like how do these guys block this guy for all that time? Mackey Award winner. So obviously that means something. From the blocking perspective, I think he can be lungy. I think he like telegraph his blocks and he's a little raw there. But however, I do believe that when he gets well engaged, he has a good anchor and is quite powerful. He's a guy that is very aggressive and knows that he's like the most aggressive, most physical player on the field, and he gets a lot of benefit from that. I think the problem is that plays well Saturday, but not as much as on Sundays, right? Everyone's a step higher, and that physicality will not quite matter as much. So I do worry about his lack of separation, and which gave me pause making my number one, and as well as what happened the last couple of years, but he wasn't as impactful. But yeah, I mean, he's an exciting prospect. He'll go very high, I imagine, in a draft that lacks blue chippers. I imagine he will be drafted in the first round. Enthusiastically, I think it's cool what he might bring to an offense. I think creative play callers will make the most of him, and I hope that he goes somewhere that he can really thrive with that. I imagine play callers from the Shanahan McVay tree would absolutely salivate about a guy like him. I imagine one of those kind of teams will take him in the first round before the Ravens ever have a chance of sniffing him. So that's my anticipation with Warren. I think because of all the other intangibles he has is why he will get probably drafted as the number one tight end in this year's draft. And I think it's reasonable. I just have a couple of concerns that maybe it won't quite work out.
All right. I'm very positive on Warren. I don't really see the kind of lack of impact out of him in previous years. I mean, he wasn't as good in 23. He's an ascending player. I would say that, but he's also a converted positional player. So first of all, I start with the most recent data is the most pertinent. So if the guy had a step back season or he's working through an injury in the final season, those are very serious things in terms of projecting his NFL value. If he had his best season in his last college season, then I think that's actually a very good thing. So it's something I would look for as a positive. Anyways, receiving metrics, 9.1 yards per target this year, 8.8 career, so an improvement. Yak was 6.7, 6.6, ADOT 6.9, but it was 7.5 for his entire career. Passer rating throwing to him 120.9. This is at Penn State, and 129.0 career. Missed tackles forced per play were still pretty good, 0.18 per play, which is above average, 0.17 career. And he's not really an inline guy, but he can line up anywhere else. So you want to line him up at fullback, you know, offset somehow from the line of scrimmage in the slot, wherever it might be. Or the big one is taking a direct snap. He's a great direct snap player. He can run the ball. He can pass the ball out of the direct snap. Is that dangerous X quarterback thing. And, you know, you put a personnel package on the field and the defensive coordinator doesn't know always how to respond to that in terms of it. And in particular at the NFL level, it's the 12 and 13 packages that are probably the most difficult packages to defend. Most everybody has their standard package they use against 11 personnel and against 21 personnel, but 11 in particular. And when they go a little heavier, then they have to make some more difficult choices. Do I put a safety? Do I use a big nickel alignment instead of putting a third corner on the field, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that Warren is a guy, you know, being a tight end who can also play quarterback will give defensive coordinators even more problem from that respect. Now, he only had 18 pass blocking snaps in 2024, only 99 in his whole career. So he's not a guy who's going to easily adapt to a role where he has to do some of his work in line. So thinking about him on the Ravens, if he were to play on the, you know, line up on the right side, whether he's offset or even as a fullback or wherever he might be set up over there, if he has to make the first block on an edge defender and to help out Roger Rosengarten rather, then, you know, that's not an easy prospect, or it's not one that I would automatically think is going to have a high probability of success. Andrews and Likely are probably better blockers, certainly at this point, than he is. But he brings a lot to the table in terms of his receiving skills. Don't think he's at all shy with contact between the hash marks. Big positive for a tight end. He finds space anywhere up the middle of the field, can do a lot of things as a route runner to get space. You mentioned he grew up as a quarterback thing, and he does have some understanding of how to manipulate a defensive back and present himself to the quarterback well. So he's looking to set himself up for presentation, I think, a lot when he's running routes. He only had one interception on any ball thrown to him this past season. This is, you know, the Penn State quarterbacks are good, but they're not great. And that was a ball that was actually happened against Kent State. It's just a ridiculous underthrow completely behind the play with the quarterback under pressure, nothing he could have had any impact on. And if you see that Kent State game, you'll see what I'm talking about. But same game, which he actually had a pretty good game that way. Let me look at he caught 5 out of 7 balls for 50 yards in that game. He had a great reach back one-handed catch in that game, which really showed off, I think, what his catch radius is. Gunnar Helm is the other really big one. There's one other in my honorable mentions who kind of meets the standard as well. So the Penn State offense, honestly, was a kind of a study in how to use Tyler Warren in different ways to be a dangerous weapon. And it kind of reminds me of Harold Fannin in a way, that he's the best player on the field and people know the ball's going to him, or he's starting with the ball, or they're going to have to do something to scheme him open some of the time. And yet they still have, you know, difficulty figuring out how to stop him on the play. He didn't suffer from being a frequent target the way some of the other guys in this draft have, in particular Colston Loveland. From that perspective, he's an easy number one choice for me. The Ravens will not have any chance at him. He'll be long gone by 27. He might be undervalued by them anyway, because they'd really have to make a trade early in order to be able to take a Tyler Warren and reset their tight end room. It'd be kind of exciting if they did. I just think that the Ravens have other bigger needs and they're looking to get more of a value tight end later in this draft. So he'll go somewhere else. And unlike you, I wish the worst on any players who are not drafted by the Baltimore Ravens. So I hope he goes to a scheme where he completely fails, along with some of the other first round tight ends that have in recent years.
That's so mean, Ken. I don't think that means fair.
That's Schadenfreude is important, particularly because a divisional opponent, you don't want him having any success. Come on. Don't even start down that road. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think that he would fit well with any of our divisional teams, luckily.
Kansas City, Buffalo, you wouldn't want him going there either.
Would be miserable. Yeah. I mean, definitely, I don't want that. But, you know, you can't help that they're good players in the league, right? And like that happens. The thing with Tyler Warren is I think he'd be really cool on like the Washington football team, right? The Commanders, any team that has a actual dynamic quarterback, I think it'd be really interesting because of the trick play optionality. So I kind of hope that he goes to a place like that.
Okay, some of my feeling about that was a lot of that was mitigated. The value of it would be mitigated coming to play with Jackson, because you really don't want to take the ball out of Lamar Jackson's hands.
Sure.
To be a direct snap guy. Now you can still do other trick play things with him and get him the football and then allow him to throw it. But that's really a subset. A lot of what he does, what Warren does, is just line up at the shotgun, take the snap and raise hell. And a lot of his JTT snaps, if you go out there, it's probably, you know, 7 snaps or something on that year where he took a direct snap as a quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess it'd be entertaining to see what Jackson or Daniels could do when they're not the quarterback. You know, they're just such dynamic players. But he's going to be a fun player, I think, in the league. And I understand why you'd put him number one entirely. And like you said, I think he'll be long gone before the Ravens have to pick. So that just pushes another guy down the draft board, though.
It really is. He's a player we know will be gone, and it'll be, you know, a little bit of a few, but a fully expected on draft night as that happens. Well, tell us, you had a hypothetical, and we can talk about another hypothetical if you want, but what's your hypothetical in terms of a draft day trade for a Ravens tight end?
In a way, I feel like the punt move is to trade Kohler and do a pick swap situation. I don't believe you'll get a full pick for him. I just can't imagine that being the case. I believe if you make that trade, that is a trigger point. You almost definitely are picking a tight end at that pick. Maybe you don't have to, but I feel like you would. I think they would execute the trade when they felt like that's the player that they don't want it to fall any further, right?
Right.
Trading up, they're effectively trading up for a guy. And I think it would be the tight end. So that I think is the most likely trade almost. I think they covet Likely. Maybe I'm just projecting. I think they want to keep him around long term. And I think I don't think it's unreasonable to keep him and Mark for their contract values. Again, because just discussing like the cost of a third wide receiver, I think you could convince yourself that from a cap perspective, it's worth having both of them on the record. So we'll see. Like you said, though, if Likely has an agent who wants him to be like the top paid tight end or something crazy, given this limited sample, I imagined they would say walk and try to find a partner that would want to pay him in that way. I imagine he would go to an inferior team. I think that'd be upsetting for him. But you know, sometimes if you want to get paid, that's what happens.
Well, so, I mean, let your agent know if you want to play with Lamar Jackson and make a little less money doing so. You know, your ideal thing is play with Lamar Jackson and make the league highest in terms of money. But that's the thing that's hardest to line up. If you're making any kind of concession on either side, either play with a lousier team and make more money, or play with Lamar Jackson and make less money. That's kind of the trade off you're making there.
I wonder also if Likely aspires to be the one and not have, you know, Mark Andrews behind him. Even if like in this hypothetical world where both of them are signed, they kind of like move to Likely as the more like the number one guy, but he's getting eaten into by a top tier tight end as well, or, you know, at least projecting like a tight end that can really contribute. So I wonder if he wants to be the guy somewhere and if that would drive him away as well, or like kind of he's making an ultimatum with the Ravens that he doesn't want to be splitting snaps in that kind of fashion. I don't know. There are some like personal aspirations, like Orlando Brown wanting to be a left tackle that might be a friction to get him out of town.
Right.
So that's something to keep an eye on.
That's certainly fair. So to go back to the Bill Barnwell suggested trade, which is the Ravens trade up from 27 to 22, 5 spots, give up pick 136, give up Mark Andrews, and they get Zion Johnson, who's been a kind of a disappointment for 3 years so far. Number one pick at number 17 overall, first round pick, 3 years ago by the Chargers. Yes, 3 years ago now. Yeah. So this is the final year of his contract, the final year of Andrews' contract. How would you feel about that trade?
I think it's a great trade. I'd be curious to see what you get at 22 that you feel like you can't get at 27. Hopefully it's for a player you covet, obviously. I think Zion Johnson could be a starting guard for us. I think at worst he's a replacement, like six offensive linemen. I think he's better than, you know, he gets credit for, per se. So, yeah, he's definitely that'd be a very exciting trade.
Yeah, I think it could be made orders of magnitude more exciting if you're moving up from 27 to 22, because either of two defensive stars are on the board and you could get them. And the two guys that I would do it for in a flash, just because I like these guys so much, are Jahdae Barron of Texas, the cornerback, or I would do it for Nick Eamon-Worry and have a second Hamilton-type player on the Ravens, which I think would be one of the really coolest possibilities.
Both really cool players. Those are two players I do know about. And yeah, they'd be fun. With Barron, I guess you're trying to play Marlon outside more.
Well, first of all, you want to get younger at the position. So whatever the fate of Marlon Humphrey, slot corner, not on the Ravens, or moving to safety, any of those three, I think are you know, possibilities. You still have the potential to keep him, and injuries happen, so you'd want to make sure he's covered anyway. But I'm not trying to move on from Marlon, by the way. I hope Marlon retires as a Raven, you know, 6 years from now, maybe. But he's going to move to safety at some time on his next contract, would be my prediction. And when that happens, I think he'll have a lot of value on the back end. And I think he potentially could last a few years there.
Oh, for sure. I think he should be forever a Raven. And I like this career arc for him. I'm excited about it as well. I think he could age really well and play quite deep into his career and be excellent. So I agree with that. Very interested to see what they do with the corner position. TJ Tampa's just there like the forgotten man, because we don't know what he'll be after the lost season. So yeah, I'm curious to see what they do. And I feel like there's still room for them to sign a veteran guy, you know, bring back White potentially.
Right. Honorable mention guys, the guys we haven't talked about so far on anybody else's list. So like Thomas Fedoni was on my honorable mention list, but he was on your top list. Who else did you like maybe that we haven't talked about?
Gavin Bartholomew. He was good. Luke Lachey is like a conveyor belt, tight end, a little bit bigger, you know, at 6'6". Mm-hmm. Those guys, I scouted CJ Dupree and Ordane Gladsden.
Ordane Gladsden, yeah.
Yeah, as well. So those beyond real mentions, yeah.
Yeah, Gladsden has a big injury flag, but he's my number 15 guy. I like Dupree, very unusual pear-shaped body, played at Alabama, and doesn't have all that much in terms of career targets or anything, but again, a lot of those Alabama guys, they never get much playing time till the end. And Dupree is a guy who I think would be a very interesting yards after contact guy, particularly if he's playing in an offense where he could get the ball late and get the ball open more often. So I thought he'd be good at that. Caden Prescorn of Ole Miss I liked. And he'd be a guy I think you might be able to get as an undrafted guy, potentially. He's right on the border between does he get drafted, does he fall off the board at the end. So those are guys. A guy I think is more likely maybe to be an undrafted guy, almost not for sure, but there's a good chance, is Brant Keithy of Utah, who I think has a chance to be a guy on the end that the Ravens would be perfectly happy bringing to camp, be perfectly serviceable, good hands, tight end, but not the not the game wrecker that they otherwise would have in another position.
Dupree used to be at UMD for his first 2 years. He actually had his best season statistically as a sophomore there. But yeah, definitely a lot of guys in the back end. I don't know if I scouted the one guy you just mentioned.
Keithy from Utah?
Yeah, Keithy. So I'll take a look at him. But yeah.
Okay, Jurasik is another guy who comes up. I'm not real high on him, the guy out of Georgia. But anyway, we've got our guys here. Really appreciate you doing this again, Alec. Always a pleasure talking football with you. Where can people talk football and follow you online?
Sure. Apulianis, Alec.Pulianis on Blue Sky. You can find me there. And then, like I said, I'm usually hanging out on Discord talking football nowadays. So that's where I'm at.
All right. So are you one of the guys who's kind of slow to respond now to Twitter comments that are made? Or do you
I might never see him. Like, okay. I literally go onto Twitter to like check your page and Jason's page and like, you know, the beat writers' pages. Like, I go directly to him. I don't go to my timeline. I have a couple DMs I'm in, you know, obviously, but yeah, I don't really log on and scroll the timeline anymore.
Yeah, it's a lot to get through. That's for certain. Anyway, other folks out there, please join us on draft night. There's all kinds of fun things to do there. We're going to have all draft content leading up to the draft, of course. And that includes a number of additional position group reviews. I'm going to do, I think, 10 this year and not do quarterback just because for the Ravens, I don't think drafting a quarterback is in the cards. But all the other 10 position groups will be taken. I don't have a lot to add to a discussion about which kicker would be the one that the Ravens might add. You're going to know just as much as I do from just looking up statistics on kickers, probably. And I think that's something we'll all find out on draft night, whether the Ravens go that way or they have an undrafted guy they really like that they keep under wraps until afterwards. Alec, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Ken. I'll say for kickers, I would just evaluate their like pre-kick routine. You know, that's the only thing I would scout. They do their cross. You know, they put their hands up like Stover did. Like that's what you can evaluate. Otherwise, it's just statistics.
Shoulder shrug, giving away the stance, giving away the snap, whatever that might be. Yeah. All right. Outstanding. Thanks for joining us, folks. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.